Okay, so we are going to pause for 15 minutes. We have 5 of those minutes left, but the city controller is here, and he does not have 5 extra minutes in his day. So I am going, as one of my last acts, I'm going to ask the city controller, I believe, wants to come up for a moment, and then we'll hear a few words. I'll say a few words, and then we will have our 5 minutes.
Great. Good morning, everybody, and really a pleasure and an honor to be with you here. I really have mixed feelings being here this morning as we bid adieu, as it were, to Jessica Levinson in the role that she has played so critically on the City Ethics Commission. 5 years ago, when I had to make an appointment to the City Ethics Commission, and the controller doesn't have a lot of different commission appointments, but this one is a critical one, there were a number of things I was looking for. I wanted somebody who was really smart, someone who was thoughtful, someone who was knowledgeable about ethics and about the public sector, someone who knew a little something about the machinations of City Hall, someone who had impeccable ethics, someone who would serve with passion, someone who would serve with heart, and most importantly, somebody who would serve with wisdom. Because knowledge is one thing, wisdom is an even harder thing to get. And Jessica, you have really been an example of all of those things. Everything that I could ever want and anything that the city could possibly want from a commissioner, particularly for this commission, you have brought, and you do so in absolutely everything you do. It's interesting, you've been one to spearhead so many changes and so much at this particular commission. And on behalf of the City of Los Angeles, I am so grateful. By the way, you have done so while also serving as a professor, while serving as a mom, while also talking on CNN and so many other places. And I've watched firsthand how you've done at each and every single one of these other things besides here at the commission, visiting Loyola, which happens to be my alma mater, which I went to law school there, and meeting your students and seeing firsthand how much respect and how much honor they give to you because you lead by example. And it's that leading by example that is so important for the whole of this commission. What you do is really no less, I think, than vouchsafing our very democracy, because it really depends on people having faith in their government, people having faith in the honesty and in the decency of those who are elected and those who interact with our city government. And without that, we don't have a government. We don't have a society. We don't have a democracy. And what you do is so critical to that. And your leadership, these 5 years, which seem to have gone just in a blink of an eye, has been critical to that. I know you're going to continue in that role for many years to come in many of your other endeavors. Can't wait to see all the great things that you're going to be doing next. And I hope that I can, and I know I'll continue to rely on your wise counsel and on your work as it helps to guide me. And you've been a great role model and a wonderful friend. And I couldn't be more grateful to you, as I think all of the people of Los Angeles are, for what you've done. So please, everybody, let's rise for a moment, if I may. And give her a huge, huge round of applause. And I have one of these handy dandy certificates here.
I haven't gotten one of those. But
yes.
One of the only thing about being president is I get to say something.
Okay.
So
absolutely.
Controller Galperin, if you have a moment.
Of course I do.
I was not until my birthday, June 30th, I'm not supposed to say anything nice about people who work in this building, but I am going to deviate from that and say you are the gold standard for public servants. And I was so honored to have this appointment, and you came to me and said, and I don't think this is confidential, I'm not going to appoint someone who donated to me because I don't want anyone to feel that they were indebted to me. And you said, I want someone who thinks through these issues. And to this day, that was the most terrifying interview I have ever been part of. You were so kind, but you put me through my paces, and you asked me some really good questions.
All my years of doing different
that I am still struggling with. And whenever we had kind of a stressful moment, you invariably, you would have a sixth sense to always check in, and you gave me... This is my daughter playing with the doorbell. And you have given me such strength and guidance. And it is truly to one of the things that I have on my resume forever will be that I was appointed by you. And I cannot tell you how much that means to me. And so thank you so much. And really, it has been an enormous honor. And I every day felt I just want to make sure that we are doing justice to this appointment. So truly, thank you so much.
You're going to make me cry. We have one of these handy-dandy certificates.
That's not me. No, I'm kidding. That is me.
Although we in the controller's office are a little bit of cheapskates, so we don't actually frame them.
I will frame it.
In the spirit of guarding the finances of the city.
Exactly. And make sure to watch her on CNN. She's brilliant.
Thank you. So you're still gonna come for brunch, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
I stopped by your office. I have the email to send.
Fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you so much. All right, it's 9:46. I promised 5 more minutes. At 9:51, let's try and begin.
There is reference in the letter from Councilmember Rue
to a motion that we do not have,
and to a legal analysis memo that we are still waiting on.
Okay. 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 It's 9:54. Is it possible to close the door? Sorry. Okay. It's 9:54. We had a 9:30 a.m. meeting scheduled. I'm going to call the meeting to order. I will say that the commission members have, and first of all, I should say, this is my last meeting. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm sorry to have this tone. I will say some words at the end. I will also say that it is troubling and dispiriting to get this amount of new legal analysis when we walk in the door at 9:30 for issues that have been discussed for months now. I feel unprepared to have an adequate conversation of these issues. We have been asked to reconsider, for instance, the matching funds, which would be moved to a 6-to-1 ratio. I was part of the commission when we actually made a recommendation to move to a 6-to-1 ratio back in 2014. That was something that we will say kind of euphemistically languished and nothing happened in the city council. As we all know, everything we do here on the commission with respect to policy is suggestive. So the city council has to take these issues up and agree with them. With respect to the 6-to-1 ratio, I voted in favor of that 4 years ago. I'm not opposed to that. The problem that I have with that, and this is not directed at anybody who's my tone is not really directed at anyone in the room except to say this is a comprehensive campaign finance ordinance. So to the extent that we move to a 6-to-1 ratio, which again, I'm not as a normative matter opposed to, we will have a domino effect where we then need to talk about how our best laid plans with respect to how you qualify is affected. We then need to talk about how our best laid plans with respect to the maximum amount that we give out is effective. I study this area of the law, and I don't think that we would do this justice to have a conversation in the next 30 minutes about it. So, and it is entirely possible that my fellow commissioners are ahead of me on this, but my suggestion is that, frankly, we need time to deal with the public comment. And I will also say with respect to the memo that we got a few seconds ago from Councilman Rue's office, that there are a lot of proposals here. Since this is my last meeting, I will on the record say, again, I have no particular problem with a 6-to-1 match, but I think that we need to be really careful about then how you qualify to get that amount of public funds. The scarcest resource we have in this building is the taxpayer money, and we need to be really careful about how we give that out. So I think that we then have to have more than 4 minutes lead time to talk about what that would mean for qualification thresholds. I as a member of the commission would have wanted to see data with respect to what that would mean. I will also reiterate my feeling that this commission should be tasked with upholding the integrity of elections and politics in LA, and we can only do that to the extent that the Supreme Court allows us to. And so the proposals that I believe stand on less than strong legal footing, I hope that my fellow commissioners do not look with favor upon those. I know that there is a legal memo that we just got. I have not had time to read through all of it. I will say, again, if you read Justice Kennedy's very clear statement in the Citizens United decision, he says very without any kind of hesitation that speaker-based identity restrictions are not permissible. And so I think that the commission needs to tread very lightly when it comes to these issues of who we decide to limit and when, particularly if we're talking about developers. And again, if money is speech, we need to be really careful about whose speech we're silencing. I do not want the city to get into a place where they face litigation. So having now gone on the longest tirade of my 5 years here, I will say I'm not prepared to have an educated conversation about the big agenda items that we face today in item number five. Thank you. So one thing I would ask my fellow commissioners is, one suggestion I have, frankly, is I think we need to table this conversation, because I don't think that we can go piece by piece if there are large moving parts like changing the ratio, which again fans out for a domino effect for every other aspect of the campaign finance ordinance. So,
thank you.
I suggest that we table item number five. We can definitely hear public comment on that. I say that begrudgingly because I think that staff has put an enormous amount of time into what we discussed. I think my fellow commissioners, you know, we get the binder on Wednesday or Thursday. We all put an enormous amount of time into looking at this, thinking about it, calling up the cases and reading them. And so this would not be my first choice, but again, I don't think we can responsibly have a full vetting of these important issues. I would suggest that we wait on item number five, and I would be happy to hear from my fellow commissioners.
This is Serena Oberstein. I agree with you, Commission President. I think as you said, there's so much work that has gone into this. We've been having this conversation for 4+ months now. We've had public interested persons meetings, and there's been plenty of opportunity to comment. Of course, we want the public to share all of their thoughts, and we want to hear feedback so that we can make educated decisions in making responsible decisions for next steps in terms of campaign finance. To receive this amount of reading and comment just prior to the meeting also makes me feel like I'm not adequately prepared to have an educated conversation. I would like to hear public comment because I think on the matter, just because I think that will further inform and reiterate probably some of the things that we're hearing and shed some light. But I would support the motion or move to table this to the next meeting.
I share everyone's chagrin because we have been working on this for a long time. The staff have really done an extraordinary job in giving us facts on all of the recommendations that we either approved the minutes, which we haven't gotten to yet, actually show at least two areas in which there is a consensus. And I think by the time we worked through the agenda over this last period of time, I think we've got consensus. I would be shocked if we didn't have consensus on the majority of the recommendations here. But as our president says, if we did go to 6-1 across the board, we've got to look at every one of the other ones. One of the impressive things about this agenda today was the extraordinary work that the staff did that we didn't even talk about, oh, if you go there, if you make that kind of a change, then remember there are two other ordinances over here that you hadn't even talked about that have to be adjusted in order to have the appropriate parity. So it is discouraging. It's particularly discouraging on the legal issue when the legal memorandum is apparently dated May 24 of 2018, which it could have gotten out to us at least several days before this meeting. So I'm very regretful, and I say it, but I do tend to agree with it. There's always the possibility, except it's summertime and maybe a lot of people, especially with children, are going to be traveling and that sort of thing, is to meet even earlier than we had anticipated and to have a special meeting. That would be the only other thought I would have to try and move this along.
All right. Well, all those in favor of a motion to hear public comment but postpone item number 5, I would move that motion.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Holly? Do you want to come up?
Hello.
I don't have my clock, so I'm going to, only because I've done this for my entire tenure, I'm going to time you and put it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll just put,
There's
actually
a clock there, but.
Well,
we don't have a.
I'll put it on.
Start.
Okay. Thank you for being here.
Yeah. Thank you for looking at this issue. I just wanted to encourage the commission to really look at the 6-1 match so that regular people can run for office, and also, I think because of the concerns of lawsuits, looking at the issues of just limiting it to individuals to donate, and to not have administrative problems. Make the 100 person versus 200 person limit, because I know that takes a lot of staff time to check if these people are in district or out. I think there could be simple solutions that don't create more work for City Hall, but make it more possible for regular individuals to run for office without the corruption of the big money. And personally, I'm against upping the limit, because already very few people, like 0.02%, give over $200. So, this is about getting everyday people donating and matching and getting involved in politics. So I think we already have a higher limit than other cities. So I think that's already, you know, personally, that's my opinion. Just, but really to not shelve it when, you know, we want real people running for office and money is a huge barrier. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. Sylvia? Sorry, Ms. Moore? Hi.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Sylvia Moore. I'm Southern California organizer for California Common Cause. We're a nonpartisan good government group dedicated to advocating for reforms that empower everyday people to lift their voices, make them heard. So in 2015, the commission supported changes to LA's campaign financing laws that we believe would strengthen the system and amplify the power of small donors and incentivize candidates to spend more time talking to constituents about issues of their concern and less time chasing deep-pocketed donors. So we're urging the commission today to not go back on those reforms but move forward. So we strongly urge the commission to recommit to supporting raising the matching funds rate to 6-to-1. A more robust 6-to-1. This would put Los Angeles on par with New York City and most recently Berkeley, California, as well as Montgomery County in Maryland. Studies have shown that augmenting match rate results in a much broader donor base and would encourage more grassroots candidates of a wider range of backgrounds and ideological views to run for office. Second, we urge the commission to consider council member reuse ban on contributions from developers as a first step for reining in special influence in our local elections. But if that's proves difficult to administer, we strongly urge the commission to consider a cleaner alternative would be a ban on all non-individual contributions, similar to what's done on the federal level and in the city of San Diego. In conclusion, elections in Los Angeles are becoming much more expensive, with millions of dollars in special interest money flooding into campaigns of candidates seeking local office. So in the meantime, the bread and butter concerns of ordinary citizens are not prioritized on the level as those same wealthy interests. So we believe strengthening LA's public financing system will go a long way towards equalizing the playing field. And I have submitted our written comments for the record here. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have someone from the city clerk's office who has generously agreed to come and talk to us about the signature requirement, which I just don't want to ask you to come back again. So if you could share your comments with us now, we won't be substantively taking that up, but you have an enormous amount of expertise and limited resources, and we'd love to hear from you.
Thank you very much. So we are involved in all the qualification of candidates who are going to run for office. Part of the process for that is to verify signatures on nominating petitions for candidates. With the accelerated matching funds program, in 2014, in preparation for the 2015 elections, we began a different sort of program in conjunction with the Ethics Commission, and that was to require people who file a greater number of signatures. If their efforts were successful, then they would be eligible to receive accelerated matching funds. Prior to that election, we typically had a very nominal number of people file petitions with the extra number of signatures. The advantage to them to provide more signatures was to save money on a filing fee. In the 2014 petition filing process, when the accelerated matching funds program impacted our operation, we went from approximately 2% of people filing a large amount of signatures to waive the fee up to 27%. So there's a big jump in the number of people who filed a greater number of signatures in order to receive the accelerated matching funds. Likewise, we continued the program in 2016 in preparation for the 2017 elections. So I can give you a basic breakdown of what the costs were and the number of people who participated in the accelerated funds program. The approximate cost increase for the matching funds program, the accelerated matching funds program, as it affected the election division, was in 2016, it was about $33,000. There were 17 candidates who filed for the accelerated matching funds, or whose intention was to receive accelerated matching funds through that program. What that comes down to is approximately a little less than $2,000 per candidate who was pursuing accelerated matching funds. So we received a cost impact of about $2,000 for every candidate pursuing the matching funds. We have the capability to process additional signatures, and we didn't really actually, what we saw between 2014 and 2016 is an increase. So I think as people became more familiar with what was available to them, they responded at a higher rate, and I would expect that to continue as well.
Could we have your comments and those statistics as part of the next binder that the next iteration of the commission gets? It doesn't have to be today.
I'm sorry.
Was there a handout?
Yes, I do have some handouts that have some figures, and I'll provide that right now.
Thank you.
I think that's really useful for us to think about, or for the rest of you to think about going forward.
Certainly.
You can continue to
There's
think
a lot
about
of
these.
Number crunching and a lot of data, which may be, which might you might want some further clarification on, and at any time, I'm happy to provide that.
From what you're telling me, maybe I'm a. You don't feel that the current requirements are overly burdensome to your office, because that was one of the concerns of the commission, and one of the issues that we're going to be addressing is to whether, under the current system or even a change system, that the signature requirement was overly burdensome on the clerk's office.
One thing that we are very good at is adapting, and so we were able to adapt, and of course, when we present budgets, we can plan for that. So with that being said, we have the capability to do it. However, we must plan for it.
And so were you prepared in 2016? You already had the $33,000 in your budget?
Actually, we had anticipated that there would be some increased cost, but because the impact to us was fairly new, we didn't have a good sense of what the real costs were. Now that we have a couple of these under our belt, we're getting a handle on what the real costs are.
And the city, those who are responding to your budget are receptive?
Yes.
Thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it. Well, what we never did was approve the draft minutes. So let's hop back in time to item number two. We have edited draft minutes to account for the typo. I would move to approve those draft minutes. The
Second.
Date typo.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Item number three, is there a possible neighborhood council discussion?
None have been presented.
Great. Item number four is our last action item. This deals with a proposed stipulation. And again, I want to thank the staff for working up these stipulations. And the maximum amount in this case would be, I think we all read it, so I'm not going to summarize the facts, would be $5,000. And we decided not to go with our usual 50% cut for cooperating, which I believe was entirely reasonable in this case because this is a repeat offense for, I believe, the same offense. And so I think you get one shot at the 50%, but I don't think you get two shots at the 50%. The other thing I would say is I do think it is reasonable also not to give the maximum because there's cooperation and that saves city resources. And the third thing I would say is it looks like this is agreed upon. So, and without much kind of fuss about it. So this feels to me very rational and reasonable and sensible. And I would open it up for questions.
I really don't have very many questions, but I will say that as time goes on these stipulations, I feel that the staff is giving us the information that we've been asking for and a justification, which our president has now reiterated, for how you came up with it. Obviously, this in and of itself does not look like a very big deal, partially because of the money involved, and it's not something that's going to be a big deal on the LA Times, but I think it is a very strong and good statement that when these cases do come to our attention and we do have to investigate them, that we go forward. And I think as people start using our website better and start seeing our history, we'll see a true pattern of consistent enforcement and consistent stipulations, which is, of course, much better than having to go to hearing officers for some of these smaller matters.
Thank you, Commissioner Orden. Just for introduction, my name is Kirsten Pickenpah.
Hi.
I'm here today.
Hello.
As the Acting Director of Enforcement, and with me is Senior Investigator Stephen Cullen. We do appreciate the feedback on the content of the stipulations.
I'll just add, to echo both of what my fellow commissioners have said, It seems like a really reasonable amount. It wasn't a huge infraction, but to do this twice, I think the step from the 50% to, I don't know if it's 75%, seems really reasonable and hopefully will serve as a deterrent not only to Mr. Kim, but also to other people who think about making contributions that are over the limit, even once.
We share that hope.
Commissioner Campos has a comment.
I agree with all that's been said. Just a couple of quick points that I wanted to raise for discussion, just to hear other perspectives from the commission. One is, I know we've kind of moved away from that 50%. Metric or that we used to have, so maybe moving away from talking about if we cooperate, then they get 50%. And the other is just a small note at the end about an aggregating factor being that he did not contact the commission staff for compliance information. And I'm just curious about the precedent that sets that they're being that becomes an aggregating factor if somebody does not contact the commission. I could see it conversely being a mitigating factor if someone contacted the commission and tried to get compliance, but being as there isn't a strict requirement to contact the commission, I'm not sure that, unless it's specific to these facts, I'm not sure in every case it should be considered an aggregating factor that someone did not ask for help from, specifically from the commission.
And that's helpful, thank you. I think we still are talking about the 50%. It's just in this case, this was a repeat offense. Was it something I said? Kathy Fung, I'm not going to forget this. Bye, thank you. I think we haven't moved away from the 50%. In general, it's because this was a repeat offense that we moved away from the 50%. Is that right?
That's accurate.
And I think that your point about kind of you didn't reach out to us, so that's going to make this worse, is something that I read as, and I would love to hear your points on that, significant only because you did this before, and now you're doing it again, and you didn't say, like, huh, there should be some flag that maybe I shouldn't go over the limit again. But is this something that we will, to your question, is this something that we will going forward think of as an aggregating factor?
I would say that we look at all of the various factors that are taken into consideration when determining a penalty anew with each case. So it would not necessarily be an aggravating factor in another case.
I would just add that whether a person sought advice from the Ethics Commission and complied with that advice is listed in our administrative code as one of the factors that must be considered every time a penalty is imposed. So that has been included as a way to help you work through the list of required factors that have to be considered. But if there's a different way to approach it, we're happy to think about that as well.
Are there any other questions?
I move we accept the proposed stipulation.
I would second that. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Concludes our action items. For informational items, we have a review of a recusal, the lobbying report, the recusal report, the pre-confirmation statements of economic interest, the policy and legislation report, and the executive director's report, which is a long way of saying the staff has been extraordinarily busy, and we thank them so much for that. And to the extent that anyone's listening, I will just again say, I think the staff deserves a lot more than to get this level of public comment the day that we enter the room, because it creates an enormous amount of work. And I do not think that, you know, it's one thing for us to have to drive back, which is not a huge deal, but it's another thing for the staff to have to rethink through things that we've been working on for months. It has typically been our practice to ask any questions we have on the informational items. I would love for a summary of the highlights of the executive director's report, and then I'll say a few concluding, not as hostile words, and we'll be done. But is there any questions on before Heather talks about the executive director's report, any other of the information items? Should we just go down the list?
Yes. Yeah. I'd like to talk a little bit about item 7, which is our quarterly lobbying report. I think, again, staff has done an excellent job, and we have a really good sense, and the public, if it takes advantage of it, will have a very good sense of what's happening in that last quarter. And which firms and which are the clients, and it's very helpful, the top 10 analysis. There are, as we were talking about earlier, an extraordinary amount of money is being paid to skilled professionals and to lobby a variety of issues. Many of them, of course, are in the development area, but many of them are in the educational area, many of them are in all very different mixed use of growth. And similarly, the actual reports filed by those who are required to file the reports, I think are, again, getting more detailed. Actually, you're beginning to see more and more true identification of what items are being lobbied, addresses of various areas, and explanations. There's still a lot of generality. And it leads me to ask, not just on that part of those reports, but I'd like to ask the executive director, whoever I should ask, what happened to our recommendations that we have made to have even more detail, including the persons within the city to be lobbied? I know you have an agenda, you have a tab here somewhere, but I think publicly we have voted on that in December, and so I would be very interested in seeing what's going on.
Absolutely. Those recommendations, the entire package that essentially overhauls the municipal lobbying ordinance, was transmitted to the City Council. They referred it to the Rules Committee, and it is there awaiting hearing. There has not been movement yet, but they have 2 years before a council file, which is what a transmittal creates, before a council file expires, so it is still alive.
Is there a tradition in the past for the Ethics Commission sending a letter, perhaps, and saying we feel that certainly we did take a long time to put it together. There is no question about that. But we do think it is important to keep movement, hope that it would be calendared expeditiously.
Yes, I think that has happened on occasion in the past, and we could certainly do that here as well.
I know it's an information item, but yeah. It's something, however we appropriately can get some consensus.
Maybe I'm just remembering the Brown Act. Maybe the best thing, so I think we all feel that we worked hard and we hope it doesn't sit there for 2 years and then expire. In terms of how the vehicle to kind of nudge them and say, remember us, maybe that's something for you and Heather to speak about offline.
We could certainly do that.
If we're all comfortable kind of reminding them that this is something we've worked on.
One way to think about it, perhaps, is at the August meeting will be a vote on the next president for the fiscal year, and typically these letters are signed either by the president or by the president and the executive director, and so perhaps after that vote is taken, that would be a good time, if nothing has happened in the meantime, at the council level to send a letter and we have an official president on record.
And there's nothing to prevent every commissioner from signing it, I assume, too.
Absolutely.
Which would
yes.
maybe show even more force
yes.
and interest
mm-hmm. yeah.
In moving it forward, which is maybe something unsolicited that you want, to the extent that everybody wants to remind them, is something that you would want to all sign on to.
Yeah.
So maybe for the next meeting you could think of a politely worded tap on the shoulder.
We'll be happy to do that.
Speaking of politely worded recommendations, I know we're skipping, thank you, Commissioner, skipping item five, and I just wanted to weigh in, and of course it took me a little bit longer to marinate. And the other commissioners, we all, as everybody here knows, we all put a great deal amount of work into preparing for these meetings, and we have questions and little notes and scribbles. I could see everybody. I probably sat next to everybody here at one commission meeting or other, and we all have notes and scribbles and arrows and things that we've worked on and hypotheticals. And I had a wowsie for the professor here that she could probably take back to her class. But at any rate, I'm a little frustrated because we spent so much time going over these things and focusing on the areas that we were interested in moving forward with, specifically the developer ban, which I assumed, again, you know what they say about people who assume, mm-hmm. we were going to spend that chunk of our time talking about. I hadn't spent as much time on the 6-to-1 ratio. I'd sort of thought that through.
It wasn't presented to us. That's
correct.
Why, yeah.
So that wasn't, even though we've reviewed it, that wasn't one of the main thrusts of what we have been talking about. So it's a little frustrating. And that is a very complicated issue, as everybody's already talked about. Perhaps they could be a gentle reminder to the groups. And I don't know how this would work. Again, we have Brown Act restrictions. That and we have the usual players or usual concerned citizens that have been attending these meetings and giving input. If there could maybe be a, say, if you want to present something to the commission to be considered, that maybe that we should get it a week in advance or something, or before our binders are prepared, because again, we have a lot of people, we have a lot of staff, and this is such a we had, I'm sure, intended to spend the thrusts of this meeting discussing the issues that we had, and again, specifically the developer ban, and it's just, and these are very complicated issues. We're talking Citizens United, we're talking about constitutional issues, just like with the lobbying reform when we had to deal with the constitutionality of those issues. And we had a lot of rigorous debate about that. So again, I think I'm expressing my frustration, and especially since the commission staff does such an excellent job of interpreting our recommendations and explaining them further and getting us extra input and data to help us make the decisions, especially with regards to the matching funds. So I don't know how that could happen. And I know there are Public Records Act requirements and all that stuff, so I don't know how that could be communicated. And I wish Ms. Moore and her group maybe were here. And it's politely worded, and I understand people are really busy, but we to work through all this and have to consider it, it's a great burden on everyone. So perhaps I don't want to say the usual players, because that's not very artfully worded, but the people who generally present things to the commission could get us these very complicated, and the council member could get us these documents in a more timely manner. And as Commissioner Worden stated, this memo, and I get it, we're all really extremely busy, it's summertime, but this memo was dated May 24th, and if we had time to absorb all that, we can have incorporated that into the questions that we had already formulated for the public comment.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think it's unforgivable that we would, that the staff would be asked to invest this level of time, that we would all be asked to invest this level of time, and that the only, I think, responsible thing to do is to not talk about it. What's the law on, and I just don't know this, but what's the law on, like, we're not going to receive your comment from this date? I mean, I can say this to my students, like, no more questions 24 hours before the exam, but do we get to do that?
I don't know what the law
is
here.
And do we want to do, I mean, so, I think to walk in the door and get a legal memo, regardless of when it's dated, is conducive to sloppy behavior or postponement.
Yes, and I will tell you, when I worked on Capitol Hill, if you wanted to provide verbal testimony at a committee meeting, you had to provide written testimony in advance, and there was a deadline on that. So it's not unprecedented to have that kind of approach.
Well, because in state law says, like, you can't cut off your ability to give public comment, kind of a certain number of written public comment, right?
And I think that all of the comment was accepted whenever it was received.
Right.
However, those who were able to speak at the meeting are those who complied with the deadline and the submission of written testimony in advance.
I would have to look at it more, but obviously, people can make public comment at any time, and we're allowed.
No, of course, and we want them to. Yeah.
The issue may be more of what level of consideration you would give to something that's submitted after a certain point.
So perhaps one of the things you could think about in the future is, when we are educating members of the public, when we're educating treasurers, when we're educating people who we deal with, is to be clear that maybe there's a policy that the commission wants to adopt that once 36 hours, 72 hours, whatever it is, goes by, that we're really not going to be able to read and integrate a full legal briefing. And I don't want to on the fly impose any sort of policy like that, but I think that it makes all the sense in the world. And this is certainly the most egregious example of this ever happening in my half decade here, but it is not the first time that I've sat down and there's been a packet that's presented to me, which is certainly not the staff's fault at all. But it's not the Rainbows and Sunshine Commission. We have to read through everything and think about it. So maybe that's a wonderful point. Maybe that's something you want to think about at a next meeting, which is, do you want to have a policy?
And it could even be before the notebooks are prepared, so that the commissioners could have plenty of time to go over everything. So it's not, you know, a two-week notice. It's maybe a week notice.
I would just add, in the spirit of not limiting speech, you know, it's one thing to receive an opinion that's, you know, four sentences. It's still disrespectful to receive it. I mean, some of these things are at 8:31 a.m. today, and the commission staff was still able to get them to us. Some of them were at 9:40 last night. So, you know, it was the same talking points over and over, and it was, you know, four sentences. So we were able to say, okay, this is a person's opinion, but to receive longer documents like a legal brief, or even there was another letter that was a packet that was, you know, point by point, these are, you know, four different things and this is why we oppose them. And again, we want to make educated decisions, and we want to be inclusive of the voices of the people of this city, and we can't adequately do that. So if people want their voices to be heard, and we want to hear and consider them, you know, that's sort of the place that we're coming from. It's not to limit speech. It's so that we can hear where you're coming from and make the most comprehensive and educated decision that's going to be in the spirit of why we all serve on this commission.
I lean toward making it very clear what the problem is, and how it delays good decision making, and perhaps do it in various ways without outlining what the possible remedy might be. I think as the president has said, this is the first time that she said anything quite as noticeable and or egregious before. So I think perhaps just letting the word out of the natural consequences. And it really is, delay is a bad thing too, and it is a remedy. And hopefully people will recognize that we care about what people are saying, and we want to be responsible. And particularly if there is something like a memo, and I think at our last meeting we actually asked for that legal memo because we said it impacted us
so
much.
Yeah. 8 weeks ago. Okay. Is there more comment before we hear from our executive director? Are there any more questions on the?
I'll just say one more thing.
Yes.
To compliment the staff on things that we also did ask for and get a better sense of. And I thought the in tab number five, which we're not dealing with now, it helped me to see the individual and non-individual contributions and the history of perhaps in 2011 you had as many as 29% of the contributions from non-individuals, and now it's 19%, 19%, and in 2017, 20%, and then to see where they're coming from. I think that'll be helpful in our dealing with the developer issue. It's a very interesting figure, and one I think that is not well known.
I think you're on.
Well, thank you. This has been, I really like how this meeting started with Controller Galperin here. That was
I thought you were going to say with my monologue.
I
really liked when you looked like steam was coming out of your head. Yeah.
Just a couple of things to highlight from the executive director's report. As you saw with Kirsten Prickenpah at the table, she is the acting director of enforcement. Sergio Perez, our former director of enforcement, has gone on to bigger and better things at the state's attorney general's office. He'll be working in the civil rights division there. And Armin Tarzi, who is our former policy director, has also left us. He is pursuing opportunities in the private sector after deciding that spending a minimum of 3 hours commuting every day was really not working out. So we have two vacancies in those positions, and we are going to be posting rapidly to get them filled as quickly as possible.
One other note regarding the fundraising window for 2020, the ordinance that the City Council asked the City Attorney's Office to prepare is going to be considered by the Rules Committee tomorrow. So if it's approved there, it will go on to the City Council, and if the City Council approves it, then the fundraising window for 2020 city elections will open on September 3rd, regardless of when the primary election is held.
September 3rd of 2018?
Of this year, yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we are already working on materials for our 2020 candidates to help them understand the rules and know what they need to do in order to comply, which also is one note that I will make about the effect of delay on our assessment of the campaign finance laws, because at this point it is highly unlikely that we would have any changes to ordinances in place before the opening of the fundraising window, assuming it opens on September 3rd. So we are probably looking at implementation after the 2020 elections for some of these changes.
And I suppose that another month wouldn't make that difference. It probably was, I guess, iffy anyway. But
it would have been tight if we had come up with something today, but delaying it until August is, it's 2 months before the opening of the fundraising window. One month.
My replacement is being confirmed tomorrow, so you may want to call it a July meeting.
That's true. We could talk about that depending on everybody's calendars. It can be tricky to schedule something like that.
Trying would be good.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'm open to that as well.
We can initiate that conversation once he gets sworn in. The other thing that I would like to do as part of the executive director's report is to add my thanks to all of the very fine words that have been said about Jessica this morning. I was looking back at what has happened in the course of her tenure, and it's pretty impressive. She has been in leadership from almost, I think, your
second
meeting.
What a coup that was.
Yes. So vice president for almost 2 years, president for 3 years. And in that time, we have overhauled the municipal lobbying ordinance. We updated our enforcement regulations and practices and procedures. We updated our advice and opinions regulations. We adopted a ticket distribution policy. We updated our audit policy and procedures. So we have been very productive during Jessica's tenure. And in addition to being productive, it has been an absolute pleasure to work with her. You are always very supportive of the staff, which the staff appreciates immensely. Oh my goodness, I'm sorry.
This is it my daughter at the doorbell?
Daughter's got a real strong
control. Right. And one of the other things that I have really appreciated about you is your ability to, even in tense conversations with the room full of angry people, or people, passionate people, I should say, maybe that's a better word, to keep the meetings moving efficiently and to keep them moving pleasantly, because it would be very easy in those scenarios to devolve into the kind of place that nobody wants to be, and you never allowed that to happen, so thank you.
The place I'm in today. Well, thank you. So let me say a couple things. I'm really happy that when you talked about what happened over the last 5 years that you said we, because this is a staff-driven enterprise. And so what I did was very limited, and I very happily was able to rely on the staff. And so let me say, look, there's always hand-wringing. I mean, if you look at the pictures of me 5 years ago, it looks like it was 15 years ago. That's in small part because of the Ethics Commission, so thank you. But the staff has been extraordinary, and everything that we have accomplished should not be listed under me. It should be listed under the staff. Working with Heather and David has been such a gift, and this is a powerful, kind of, as I said, staff-heavy commission, and I think that that is appropriate. I think we come in for as a gut check. I think we come in to raise more questions. I think we come in to bring our thinking, but I think that the heavy lifting happens in between the 8 weeks that we parachute in every morning. And, as for sitting with my commissioners, I would say this is really a fun iteration of the commission. Every single person sitting here has added something, has been so much fun to work with. Vice President Oberstein, we don't see what happens behind the scenes, but has been so extraordinarily helpful in so much of what happens before we get the binder, before we get to talk about it. And certainly it's not her personality to kind of toot her own horn, but has been so helpful every step in the way in all of the accomplishments that you listed. Just listening today, I mean, Commissioner Campos asked a really good question about enforcement, which I think helps our thinking on those issues. And I ask that we not have a reception because resources and time are scarce, and who wants that? But I will say I really, a lot of the time, had a really good time. And thank you so much for doing what you are doing. And I think I'm going to be the last word because I don't want people to feel like they have to say something nice at this moment. And I really look forward to watching what you do going forward. And to the extent that I have helped in any way facilitate the positive changes over the last kind of half decade now, I am so glad, and that will be something that I am proud of. And we are adjourned.